This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The objective of the administration at the moment clearly is to try to extend the truce or ceasefire as long as possible and get as many hostages released as much as possible.
That was Paul Pillar, a former senior CIA officer who now teaches at the Georgetown University, on the likely U.S. goals in the Israeli-Hamas conflict. Details coming up. Also, Islamic militants have carried out a major attack against an army detachment in northern Burkina Faso, and the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence campaign was initiated over 30 years ago. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. So far, no details have come out about the planned release of hostages from Israel held by the Hamas militants in Gaza or about the release of Palestinians held in Israeli jails. Also today, hundreds of Tanzanians bid a tearful farewell to an agriculture student who was killed in the Hamas-Israeli conflict in a funeral at his home village in Kirwa, in the Mount Kilimanjaro region. 22-year-old Clemens Felix Matenga was reported missing after the October 7th attack. Matenga and another Tanzanian student, Joshua Molele, 21, went to Israel in September for an agricultural internship, but both went missing after the October 7th attack. Tanzania's foreign ministry confirmed his death in a statement last week without elaborating on how he was killed and said Molele was still missing. On the first day of the ceasefire in the Israeli-Hamas conflict today, the two sides have traded accusations of a serious violation. The Israeli military said three explosive devices were detonated near its troops at two locations in northern Gaza, and that militants at one site opened fire on the troops, who fired back. Hamas in turn accused Israel of committing a blatant breach of the ceasefire, triggering retaliation by its fighters without providing details. It said in a statement that it was still committed to the ceasefire so long as the enemy is committed to it, and urged mediators to intervene. Hamas and allied militants from Gaza took about 240 people hostage on October 7th. Since the attacks, which killed an estimated 1,200 people, Israeli forces have bombarded Gaza, and the health ministry there has estimated more than 13,000 people have died. More aid is flowing into Gaza from Egypt as part of the truce agreement. Israel has allowed only limited food, fuel and medical supplies into Gaza since the fighting began. U.S. military aircraft carrying humanitarian supplies are expected to arrive in Egypt today to be ferried into Gaza. For an update on the situation, I spoke earlier with journalist Linda Grantstein in Jerusalem.
So a total of 50 hostages, almost all of them women and children, have been freed. And, Israel TV has been full of emotional reunions with their families. Physically, most of them are okay. They're thin. They've lost weight. Psychologically is another story. Some of the children are refusing to speak. They were afraid of speaking while they were in captivity. And there are stories coming out now that Hamas forced at least some of the children to watch videos of the atrocities that were committed on October 7th, and that if the children cried, they would threaten them with guns stuck in their face. They said that in the last couple of weeks, food has run out, and that they had to ask permission to go to the bathroom. So especially for the children, apparently there was significant psychological damage.
150 Palestinians have been freed from Israeli prisons. What is known about them? Why were they jailed in the first place?
So there are over 6,000 Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails. Of the ones who were freed, they were all women and minors. Some of them were convicted of, you know, things like stone throwing and fairly, you know, not such terrible things. But especially the women, some of them were convicted of attempted stabbing of settlers or soldiers. And for the Palestinians, the prisoner issue is a very big issue. And so these Palestinians who have been freed are from the West Bank or East Jerusalem, and their freedom has given Hamas a real boost in the West Bank. They were welcomed in Ramallah with lots, you know, crowds celebrating them and things like that. Israel has a list of other women and children that it's willing to release in exchange for more Israeli hostages.
And Linda, Israel and Hamas have extended their truce, but it seems only a matter of time before the war resumes. As I mentioned earlier, Israel and Hamas are already trading accusations of a serious violation.
Yes, although it does seem that at least for now, both sides are interested in extending the ceasefire. Israel's head of the Mossad, David Barnea, is in Qatar, and Qatar has played a very important role in negotiating both the ceasefire and the extension. So the ceasefire was supposed to run out at 7 a.m. this morning, local time. It's been extended for 2 days. Over that 2 days, Israel agreed to release 3 Palestinian prisoners for every hostage who's released, and Israel is expecting 10 more hostages today and another 10 tomorrow. That said, there are still 10 children who are being held in Gaza, but apparently not by Hamas. 30 children have been freed, have been released, and another 10, including 2 little boys who've kind of become the poster children for the hostages. One is a 10-month-old Kfir Bibas and his 4-year-old brother Ariel, who were kidnapped with their parents, and the 2 little boys have bright carrot-topped hair and so have become, you know, sort of an iconic symbol. They were apparently handed over to another group. And so the 10 children who have still not been released apparently will not be included in these next 2 releases, which are supposed to happen today and tomorrow. Israel has said it's willing to extend the ceasefire for up to 10 days total, as long as Hamas keeps releasing hostages and Israel will keep releasing prisoners. But Israeli officials say they are committed to resuming the war at the end of the ceasefire because they say their 2 goals are to get the hostages released and to make sure that Hamas can never again present a military threat to Israel. Now, Israel is in control of the northern Gaza Strip, but it hasn't even started fighting in the southern Gaza Strip.
Talking about the southern Gaza Strip, U.S. is telling Israel any ground campaign in southern Gaza must limit further civilian displacement.
Yes, right now, almost the entire population of the Gaza Strip, which is 2.3 million Palestinians, is now concentrated in the southern Gaza Strip after Israel told people to leave the northern Gaza Strip in order to be able to fight Hamas without worrying about civilian casualties. Now the United States is suggesting that Israel designate several safe zones that would be near UN schools, in which Israel would guarantee that it would not carry out airstrikes or ground strikes in order to minimize civilian loss. That said, you know, now Hamas has been able to, over the 4 days of the ceasefire, it has been able to move south. It's been able to sort of, you know, hide itself among the population. So it's still going to be a very difficult military operation to really finish Hamas, which is what Israel says it wants to do.
That was journalist Linda Gradstein. She talked to me from Jerusalem. The chief of the main U.S. spy agency is on the road visiting Doha for key talks on what happens next in the fight between Israel and Hamas. VOA National Security Correspondent Jave Selden has more.
U.S. officials rarely talk about travel plans for CIA Director William Burns, but a U.S. official confirms to VOA Burns is currently in Doha. The high-level talks, according to the official, are focused on the Israel-Hamas conflict, now in its 53rd day, and on the up to 175 hostages still being held by Hamas. Paul Piller, a former CIA officer who now teaches at Georgetown University, tells VOA The goal seems to be to keep the current pause in fighting in place.
The objective of the administration at the moment clearly is to try to extend the truce or ceasefire as long as possible and get as many hostages released as much as possible.
This is at least the second time this month Burns has traveled to the Middle East following the October 7th terror attack by Hamas that killed some 1,200 people. Earlier this month, U.S. officials said the CIA director visited several countries in the region to discuss the Israeli response. Pillar says it's not surprising, given Burns' background.
He is a highly accomplished and very much respected, both at home and abroad, diplomat. So he has become, for the Biden administration, a very useful general-purpose diplomatic troubleshooter on matters that may have little or nothing to do with his day job as the CIA director.
As for Qatar, it's played a key role in facilitating talks between Israel and Hamas, most recently helping to negotiate the extended pause in fighting in exchange for the release of 50 of the Hamas-held hostages and 150 Palestinian prisoners held by Israel. Jeff Selden, VOA News, Washington.
Islamic militants have carried out a major attack against an army detachment in the northern Burkina Faso town of Djibo. Security forces told the French news agency AFP that a detachment in the Sahel region was the target of a large-scale jihadist attack perpetrated by armed terrorist groups on Sunday. The Burkina Faso Information Agency said more than 400 militants were killed. AFP said it was told an unspecified number of soldiers also died. The 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence campaign was initiated over 30 years ago, aiming to raise awareness about how to prevent gender-based violence. VOA's Pauline Ndiho has our report.
Initially started by activists at the Women's Global Leadership Institute in 1991, the activism campaign seeks to address the widespread issue of violence against women and girls, which remains a significant human rights violation worldwide. The United Nations Deputy Secretary General Amina Mohammed highlights the urgent need to combat this violence.
Halfway through the 2030 agenda, we are far from achieving the target of eliminating violence against women and girls. It transcends borders and cultures.
This campaign serves as a platform for individuals and organizations globally to advocate for the prevention of violence against women and girls. With the COVID-19 pandemic, conflicts, climate change, the risks and the threats of gender-based violence have increased, making women and girls more vulnerable. Diana Keita is the Deputy Director, United Nations Population Fund.
To prevent violence for good, UNFPA works with communities, especially with men and boys, to change harmful gender norms and promote positive masculinities.
Robust responses, including investment in prevention, are crucial to address this issue. On drugs and crime, and United Nations Women reveals a shocking statistic. Sima Bahous is the Executive Director, UN Women.
The realities of the ubiquitous violence women and girls endure in conflict extend to the home also. Today's report by UNODC and UN Women shows that more than 5 women or girls are killed every hour by someone in their family.
Activists are urging governments worldwide to make commitments and implement policies and actions to end violence against women and girls. This responsibility, they say, falls on individuals from all walks of life who must join forces to address the problem. Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
Around the world, people are marking the United Nations 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence. Help us mark the work to end violence against women by sharing your thoughts on VOA's English to Africa radio programs. Send a voice message or a text to this WhatsApp number, +1 202 258 3076 before December 10th. Tell us what is being done in your community to fight gender-based violence and tell us why this issue is important to you. That number again is +1 202 258 3076.
You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. According to a 2023 report by the Global Action for Sustainable Development, Liberia is losing an entire generation to drug abuse, with its capital Monrovia alone having more than 800 drug hubs and an estimated 100,000 drug users. An older generation of rehabilitated child soldiers have moved to join the fight against drugs using a behavioral therapy approach. Sananu Tord reports from Monrovia, Liberia.
Along the Du River in Monrovia is a community of about 150 youth notorious for illicit drug use and sales. Those who live here call the area Abule City and say it is a haven for unemployed and frustrated comrades to find some peace. Benedict Souza is a resident and leader of the community. He says Liberia's unemployment has driven many youths to desperation. Many resort to drugs to cope.
Abule contains all of the calibrated habits. We get illegal people there, we get drug users there, we get cigarette users there, we get opium users there.
Souza explains that while Liberia's unemployment has driven some youth into violent crime, communities like the Abule City provide a kind of security to those who live there.
We don't allow intruders, much like criminals, to come into our midst because you have the community dwellers, it's resting upon us. We agree, these are hard substance that we're not supposed to do. But because of situations, we're providing situations, we do it. But now we're standing still. The community owners things. We are there doing it and know that we are not bad people and will never be bad people.
A 2023 report by the Global Action for Sustainable Development says there are 866 ghettos like the Abule City in Liberia's capital alone. The report estimated that about 100,000 young people in Monrovia are involved in substance abuse. Advocates say Liberia's 14-year civil war in the 1990s and early 2000s bet this epidemic. Thompson Ball is a programs manager with the Network for Empowerment Progressive Initiatives in Liberia.
Since the end of the Civil War, the issue of drugs started in the country. And at first, it was actually being done by the warlords. They were given to the fighters in order to get them briefed to the front line, because at that point, they cannot be to their senses, so they get them briefed to fight. Then after the war, it began a major business now in Liberia.
The Network for Empowerment Progressive Initiatives is a donor-funded nonprofit that uses trauma therapies and cognitive behavioral therapies, CBTs, to help more than 500 former child soldiers adapt into society after the Civil War. Ball says the program is now using the CBTs to help young people struggling with drug abuse.
There are some that are carrying weapons. There are some that, because of the abuse of drugs, they want to maintain that status, they have become armed robbers. So based on our interview, we try to deal with those higher risks that are in the community.
Substance abusers are admitted to the program for 8 weeks, undergoing counseling and therapies that include life skills, training, and support for resettling. Johansson Dan is the chief trainer for NEPI Liberia.
When they graduate from the training session, they do not have place somewhere good or safe to go. Those are some of the things we get involved to find a family member and tell them about the importance of accepting the bike in their home.
NEPI graduated 314 drug-using youths from its first cohort in August, supporting them with funds so they can re-enter society. With support from former child soldier volunteers, They say they hope to tackle substance abuse in Liberia, one group of graduates at a time. Sana Anutod, VOA News, Monrovia.
Conservationists in Kenya are ramping up efforts to protect elephants and increase their dwindling population. This follows a study published earlier this year that shows elephants play an important role in mitigating climate change. Juma Majanga reports from Kenya's Amboseli National Park, home to over 2,500 elephants.
On the vast savanna in Kenya's Amboseli National Park, herds of elephants roam, grazing on green vegetation that is just starting to regrow following a deadly drought in the Horn of Africa. The record drought killed over 400 elephants, according to the Amboseli Ecosystem Trust, prompting the local Maasai community to come up with measures to protect the animals. Daniel Leturesh is a Maasai elder and the chairperson of the Amboseli Ecosystem Trust Board of Trustees. He says this was the first time he has seen elephants die. Before, it was unusual to find dead elephants on the paths. So the Maasai decided to provide more land for conservancies to benefit the animals and community. Elephants play a key role in the ecosystem, acting as landscapers. Research published early this year in January 2023 by scientists at St. Louis University in the U.S. and their colleagues indicates that the mammoth animal also plays a role in mitigating climate change, as Morris Nyaligo, a conservation ecologist, explains.
Elephants are very critical because they do help with the carbon sequestration process. They do absorb a lot of the pasture and to help to transform woodlands and grasslands, and in that process help to store carbon. If it were not for elephants, a lot of carbon would still be emitted back into the atmosphere.
Africa was once home to 10 million elephants, but after decades of ivory poaching and severe weather due to climate change, their numbers have dropped to less than 500,000 on the continent today. Through its Room to Roam initiative, the U.S. charity International Fund for Animal Welfare is seeking to conserve African elephants by linking their cluster sites in southern and eastern Africa. Azadine Downs is the chief executive officer of the charity.
Our focus really is to work with the community, learn from them, and find out what the challenges are for the people that live with wildlife.
The Room to Roam initiative earlier this month brought together traditional community leaders from East and Southern Africa to Kenya for knowledge sharing. Experts say merging indigenous practices with new approaches can boost elephant conservation in Africa in the face of a changing climate. Alpheus Sindazi is an Ndebele traditional leader from Zimbabwe.
As a people, our blessed continent, we still have wild animals in numbers. My plea will be to say, let's continue keeping these wild animals. They are a source of revenue. They are a source of living. I marvel to see them moving around.
Majestic animals that not only inspire awe, but experts say can also help save the planet. Juma Majanga, VOA News, Amboseli National Park, Kenya.
This week on Straight Talk Africa, we'll look at Africa's regional economic outlook. In the last 10 years, the debt ratio has almost doubled in sub-Saharan Africa, while a sluggish global economy, worldwide inflation, pushing up borrowing costs, as well as the cost of living. Join me, Heidi Adams, and my guests as we discuss how countries can shield against economic distress on the next Straight Talk Africa, this Wednesday at 18:30 UTC.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Tien Wong, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.